Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Is that you trying to recreate the soundtrack to Poor Things?
Yes, it is. But that's actually, I just realised that's more like the Mockingjay song in The Hunger Games, isn't it? Yeah, that's actually, I'm going to go as far as to say that whoever wrote the horrible score to Poor Things stole that from The Hunger Games.
I'm not going to say that.
That's going to be my opening gambit.
That's your opening gambit. My opening gambit
no,
is...
No, it's not. It's not exactly the same.
Is that Poor Things is shit. sorry to be blunt, but
let's dig into it while I try and work out how that goes. That's Mockingjay. Poor Things is Mock. It's about something like that.
Yes.
That's good audio, isn't it? That's going to pick up really.
That's going to sound brilliant. Everyone listening to this episode is going to love that.
That's going to sound about as good as the score from Poor Things, which is horrible, as expected. You know what? This film is kind of exactly what I was expecting. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, this is. You know me. I like a bit of Yorgos Lanthimos.
Yeah. Right. So I've. As previously mentioned, I've only seen the two of his that we've done before from this podcast. The Lobster, which I liked, but the score just ruined it for me. So overall, there was kind of, you liked that more than I did. Yeah. The Favourite, we both loved, didn't we?
Yeah, The Favourite is one of the best films I think I've ever seen. It's genuinely brilliant.
That's a work of genius that just so completely understands the time period it's set in, its source material, and also understands how to subvert all of the kind of expectations and all of the tropes of what it's doing of historical fiction and how kind of historical accounts of royalty and those kind of things are portrayed on film. It's like a commentary on that whilst also being an amazing story about, you know, sexuality and aging and grief and all kinds of things that all come together in a really incredible way. And it's also hilarious as well. And then, yeah, you get to Poor Things and you're just like, how did you get it so wrong, Yorgos? I'm sorry. How did he do that? Yorgos is as good as mine.
For fuck's sake.
I made that joke on the Favourite episode and you ignored it. So I had to get that one in. I've been waiting to make that joke for like 2 years.
Paddy.
3 years, however long it's been.
I'm really sorry, but that joke just then, that was a Lantha mess right there. So Poor Things.
That's Simon Mayo's joke, by the way. I can't take credit for that.
How dare you? How dare you not only bring a stolen joke to this podcast, but bring a bad stolen joke to this podcast?
Bad stolen jokes. That's our new segment.
This is...
When at Christmas, it can be bad stolen jokes.
Fuck's sake. This movie is what you would get if someone who hated the works of Yorgos Lanthimos had to describe the works of Yorgos Lanthimos.
It's like one of those memes where it's like, this is what Metallica sounds like to people who don't listen to Metallica.
Yeah, that's exactly what this is. I really didn't like this movie. There's parts of it that are good. I'm going to say that.
Yes.
There's genuinely several lines of dialogue in this film that made me laugh. However... Yeah. This is probably the worst example of overhyped bullshit in cinema that I've seen in a really long time. I do not get why people are raving about this movie as much as they are, because it's fucking... It's one note, right? That's the thing that really gets me about this movie, is one note. The entire... Whereas The Favourite has this complexity and this brilliance to it, this is literally just the same thing over and over and over again.
And it thinks that it's being clever, by like transitioning from black and white to color the moment she starts having sex with Mark Ruffalo, or like suddenly opening up this sort of Willy Wonka-ish visual in the world once she starts exploring the world. But the core of the story and what it's telling you is exactly the same the whole way through. So it almost makes all that stuff seem pointless.
Yeah, and the worst thing about it is that tonally, it's exactly the same. It's it's whimsical swearing with a fisheye lens for 2 and a bit hours.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I don't want to come across as some kind of dullard who doesn't get the art, but this movie is fucking boring.
That's the thing. We're going to hear people writing into us to tell us that we're stupid because we don't like it. That's going to happen.
You know, this is just a case, like, genuinely.
It's gothic Wes Anderson. That's what it is.
It's steampunk.
Gothic bawdy Wes Anderson.
Steampunk Wes Anderson.
I don't even think I'd go as far as to call it steampunk, though, because all you get on that front are just sort of a few sort of nice visuals hinting at a sort of vaguely steampunkish world in the background. There's nothing in the story that actually says steampunk
at all,
is there?
That's all steampunk is, I'm sorry.
I'm not like a big steampunk guy.
Steampunk is
the nerdy
cousin of cyberpunk. There's fuck all in steampunk that has any cultural clout whatsoever, and this is what this movie is. It's, oh, look, they're wearing goggles and they've got some archaic technology that's also really fancy and futuristic. That's all steampunk is. Bullshit.
Yeah.
Cyberpunk's where it's at. Cyberpunk is where you can get into the nitty-gritty of the human condition. Steampunk is just flash shit for nerds, which is what this movie is. This movie is flash shit for nerds.
I wouldn't call it flash.
Grandmaster Flash.
Yeah. No, cyberpunk, isn't that where you can go inside Keanu Reeves?
No, Keanu Reeves goes inside you.
Oh, that's the one. Yeah. Yeah, sounds good. I can't say I've experienced that much.
Wasn't too fond of Cyberpunk's 1 through 2076, but Cyberpunk 2077 got it right on the formula on that one.
At last. All thanks to Keanu. God bless him.
This movie, right, okay. This should be everything that I want in a film.
Yeah, I'm quite surprised that you're going in saying you really don't like it. Because I didn't enjoy it either, but I think there is a lot to like about it, and a lot that is good, and a lot that is competent, and a lot that does work when you sort of take it as its own thing. Like, for example, the performances taken as if you had to isolate it, I think it is a good performance from Emma Stone, but it's a bit off because it's such the way it's put together is kind of strange. But Willem Dafoe, I think, is a fantastic performance. For me, he made it.
For me, right, a bunch of good individual components making up a shit sandwich. Like,
well, yeah, but that's the fundamental problem with it, isn't it?
You get the greatest bread in the world. You get the finest quality Wagyu beef feces.
You get milk slice.
It's still a shit sandwich at the end of the day. And that's the problem, is that, yeah, there's all of these individual components here which work. Well, kind of work.
It's like, isn't there that coffee that's made from poo?
No, the beans get passed through some kind of mammal that can't digest them, but then it creates good poo. This is the opposite of that.
It's like whatever the opposite of that is, that's what this is.
What's it called? This is what they should put on the posters and on the Blu-ray release.
The poo goes to a cafetiere.
This is Kopi Luwak's Wario. That's what this is.
Who the hell is Kopi Luwak?
So that's what it's called, the civet coffee.
Oh, I thought that was a person. Some cool director that I didn't know of. I'm clever enough to have heard of Yorgos Lanthimos. only the coolest kids know about who was it? Lupe Fiasco?
Kopi Luwak.
Kopi Luwak.
I don't know what that means in Indonesian.
I'll have to find out. It probably literally means
poo coffee. But that's the thing, right? There's bits and pieces that are brilliant as individual components in this movie, but when you put it all together, there's nothing here of any substance. Like, thematically, there's nothing thematically engaging about this movie, unlike The Favourite, unlike The Lobster, where actually those thematic elements are what really drives it. This has...
Yeah. And it's irritating because we've gone into it with it being, like, highly praised for that element.
Yeah, and it's not. I'm sorry. It's really not. Yeah. What's up with critics at the moment? liking bullshit. Like the new Alex Garland movie that's come out, Civil War, right? Everyone, all the critics are saying, oh, it's brilliant, it's genius, it's a work of art. I'll tell you why they're saying that is because it's about journalists and they feel like they're being fluffed by a movie about journalists. Okay. Whereas in reality, it's a bunch of centrist claptrap about there's a civil war in America, but look at our duty to journalism. Aren't we brave?
Have you seen
it? No, but everyone I know who's seen it says it's shit.
Oh no, because Alex Garland is your boy.
Yeah, I really like his work, but yeah, he also uses footage from various far right people who took footage of like the Black Lives Matter protests and things like that, and it's like, ooh. Yeah, there's some weird bullshit going on there. I don't exactly know what. I don't know whether our guy's secretly a chud. Which would be disappointing. But anyway, Poor Things, 2 hours and 21 minutes of dog shit.
Oh, it's so long. Like, for the first half hour, it's kind of manageable, isn't it? And then, yeah, as soon as she kind of leaves to go to the outside world, you're like, well, are you going to do anything different and interesting with this?
No.
No.
And that's...
You kind of already set up what it is. And it's like, there's no real growth for her character, is there? Once it establishes what the thing that it wants you to focus on, which is that, okay, yeah, she, like the baby's brain has been imported into an adult woman. Creepy. Like, and then she's like growing into gradually into her sexuality. But then once you've kind of established that, oh, look, she's having lots of sex... It just kind of doesn't really go anywhere with that.
Yeah,
does it?
You start with a character who's fiercely independent minded and you end with a character who's fiercely independent minded. And all of the stuff along the way of her developing an understanding of philosophy and everything like that doesn't add anything whatsoever to the overall.
No.
Like,
and that was deployed in a very cheap way, I thought, where like, yeah, suddenly she's talking about Descartes or Derrida or whatever it is, like just in kind of a few throwaway lines. And it's like, actually, you could have done a lot with that. But instead, you wanted to like really focus on the sort of the grotesquerie of her becoming a prostitute instead.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily think there's that much grotesquerie of it in terms of like, it's a very vapid, high level empowerment of women. Focus.
Yeah.
It's fine, whatever. But people who are saying that this movie is particularly deep, it's not. This could be done by Darren Aronofsky.
Well, yeah, that's exactly it.
That's exactly it.
This felt like a Darren Aronofsky movie.
Yeah, apart from with more people saying in funny ways. Which to be fair is probably the most enjoyable thing of this movie is the script is very funny.
None of Darren Aronofsky's films feature Mark Ruffalo saying to a guy in the street, I'll kick your fucking dog to death.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so let's talk a positive here. There's quite a lot of funny lines. Emma Stone saying, I must go punch that baby. Very, very funny.
I wrote that down. I need to enjoy that.
My father once told me always carve with compassion. He was a fucking idiot, but it's not bad advice. I think a lot of the bits of dialogue from Willem Dafoe were very good. I've taken heroin because of my pain, amphetamines for energy, and cocaine because I like cocaine. That's another good one. I'm paraphrasing because I can't quite remember it. I just wrote down lol cocaine. and so there's all of these moments which are funny. Individually, but unless they are tied into something which has a kind of narrative drive, all they are scenes that you could put on TikTok to get some people laughing at them. This is Yorgos Lanthimos's TikTok movie. There's no thematic drive through this movie. I would say Dumb and Dumber has a stronger thematic drive than Poor Things.
And more of a character arc.
And more of a character arc, yeah. And I know that people are talking about Emma Stone's amazing performance. She's fine, but
It's the same all the way through.
It's the same all the way through, and that's the same for every single character. Like, Mark Ruffalo in this is really enjoyable, but it's one note. Willem Dafoe is really enjoyable. It's one note. Rami Youssef is really enjoyable. It's one note.
He's great, yeah. I hadn't seen him in anything before. He's probably a rising star. He's going to go on to bigger and better things than this.
Dumb and Dumber remake.
Yeah,
I'm trying.
Didn't they already do that?
I'm trying to think. He looks really familiar. He's been in something I've watched. Oh, he turns up in Mr. Robot. That might be where I recognize him from. Did you ever watch Mr. Robot?
No, I never saw that.
That was good. It was a good show.
But I have to be suspicious of the fact that he made a show called Rami, and it's like one of those things where it's like about the guy's life, but not about the guy's life, and it's like a fictionalized thing. I'm always suspicious of those.
Oh, like the
shows,
Rob Schneider one.
Was there a Rob Schneider?
Yeah, he did one called Rob, didn't he?
Oh, I imagine that is genuinely the worst television you could watch of all the things that are out there.
But let's return back to our
I'd rather watch
zone.
Paw Patrol than that. But you know, Louis C.K. did it. Mark Maron's one was kind of okay.
There's something incredibly self-indulgent about it, even if it's really good.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, his was called Real Rob, not just Rob.
Oh, yeah. In many ways, Seinfeld is kind of the original of that, isn't it? But it had that different kind of setup where he was telling the jokes and the guy was doing the keyboard bass. So,
yeah, and then he...
If it hasn't got a guy following you around doing keyboard bass to all your, in time with all your jokes, then I don't want to know, basically.
Yeah, this movie really rubbed me up the wrong way. I don't know whether it's because I like his stuff and I like the people involved stuff, that the fact that it...
That's the thing.
It was so disappointing.
I wanted to like it. Do you think if there'd been no hype, if you'd just gone into it completely cold, you would have felt differently?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe if people hadn't been talking about it being a truly brilliant movie that won all these awards.
You'd have been like, it's all right.
Yeah, I'd have been, it's okay. It's no favourite. It's not as good as The Lobster, but it's still enjoyable. And it's
have you seen any of his other ones?
No, I've been meaning to watch Dogteeth.
Dogteeth.
And I started watching The Killing of a Sacred Deer, and that was really good. But it was making me incredibly anxious, so I turned it off, and I need to go back and watch it when I'm in a good headspace.
He seems like the kind of director who could do that.
Which, yeah, and I like those kind of movies that are just incredibly tense and weird and uncomfortable. And so I was enjoying it, but it was definitely sort of like, yeah, I can't watch this right now because I'm genuinely just going to get awkward and and restless. But yeah, so what I've seen of his stuff, I haven't watched Dogtooth, but I've seen the others at least partially, and this is easily the worst of his films that I've seen.
Yeah,
because
this was worse than The Lobster, I thought,
because it just focuses on the flash elements as opposed to what matters. Like, you get, oh yeah, like you said, you get that, oh, the switch from black and white to color, which is done in the most simplistic way possible. You get the weird sort of steampunky cities and the steampunky boat and those really colourful... Edgelord Wes Anderson is basically what this movie is. Edgelord's Wes Anderson, apart from Wes Anderson movies, often have a bit more narrative structure. Like, you compare this to...
Sexy Gothic Wes Anderson is what I wrote.
You compare it to Grand Budapest Hotel...
Yeah.
Zero. Like, you could look at them and say they look similar, but one of those movies has a really strong central plot. One of those movies has a dog with a duck's head. And don't get me wrong, I love the
and
dog.
Doesn't do anything with it.
And I don't actually mind that they don't do anything with it. I like that there's all these weird little animals around because they showcase him as this creepy Dr. Frankenstein figure. I like that about it, but it's just that lack of anything. You can have as many sharp lines of dialogue as you like, but if there's no heart to the film, it's not going to last long in the memory.
Yeah, I mean, The Room has a lot of snappy dialogue in it, doesn't it?
But... yeah. And I'm far more likely to quote The Room than I am to quote anything from this, even though individually there's lots of great, great jokes. You know, it is a funny movie, but it's like popcorn, or it's like candy floss. Candy floss is a better example, actually, because it just disappears. Like,
it's thin and there's too much of it. Yeah. The thing, you get like a big bag of candy floss or a big stick. You have three bites. You're like, oh, that's all right. I've had enough now. I'm still going
to
get through all
and
of this.
And then you've got the rest of it to get rid of. And
yeah,
spit it out like she spits out that disgusting piece of food. Also, it uses the font from Men in Black and Men in Black 2.
Yeah.
Not enough people are talking about this.
Here comes the Lanthimos.
Gonna show a shit film. Yeah, I didn't like this film. It was aggravating. I had to watch this in three parts to get through it.
I watched it in two.
Because it was just annoying me too much. And, like, that's not a good sign. It's yeah, right. Like I've not read the original book. I don't know how.
Well, what I gather on that, I haven't either. Alistair Gray was a titan of Scottish literature, and I've never read any of his work. He's one of those people I've always meant to get around to reading and never have done so. But he won a lot of prizes for it. It came out in 1992. But apparently it's more of like a social commentary on Scotland's relationship with England and with Great Britain, right? Mm-hmm. And that was taken out of the film because obviously that's, Yorgos Lanthimos didn't feel that he could make that, which is fair enough. Because he's Greek, he didn't want to mess with that, which is fair enough, because then all of Scotland probably would have come for him if he got it wrong. But you know, it's just, if you feel like maybe that if that wasn't the focus of it, what has been added to it, he's taken only the sort of surface level of it and then put in a bunch of vapid aesthetic nonsense on top of and then people are going to call that his genius.
If you're not going to in some way have a relationship with the core theme of a work, why are you adapting the work?
Yeah.
Quite frankly, sorry, but yeah, if you're not going to in some way relate to the central core theme of a work, why are you adapting it and why are you not making your own thing? Quite
and
honestly.
Supposedly Alistair Gray did agree to it. Before he died 2018, I'm going to say. And apparently in the early 2010s, Yorgos Lanthimos did talk to him about it, and he did have his blessing to turn his very, very good and apparently very, very bawdy and deep and intelligent book into this
piece of shit.
This mess, I was going to say.
I'm really annoyed by it.
Were you annoyed by it from the off, or did it?
Yeah, it annoyed.
Because at first I was like, I'm intrigued by this. I can see why this is winning the awards. I get it. And then after about 15, 20 minutes, I was like, okay, it's not going to go anywhere from here, is it? And it didn't.
Yeah, maybe that's fair. Maybe it's not that it annoyed me from the off, but about 15, 20 minutes in. Initially, I was like, okay, this is kind of pretentious, but I like the weird animals and I like his weird face. And the idea of a baby brain being put in an adult is fun. And I hope they go somewhere fun with that idea. But then, yeah, pretty soon you realise, okay. And one of the great things about pretentious moviegoers is people talking about Emma Stone's performance and going, oh, look, she studied the way that her child moves. And then she's like copying that. And isn't that brilliant? It's like, no, I'm sorry. This isn't good act. Like, it's a good performance, clearly given with the direction of what the director wanted. It's slapstick comedy, basically. Like, this is nothing that Jim Carrey didn't do in his various shit movies in the 90s.
She never climbed out of a rhino's butthole, did
she?
Well,
exactly.
And
yeah.
Like, where's Jim Carrey's Oscar for
that? Yeah, where's the rhino butthole scene, Yorgos? Come on. That's what the people want.
That actually sounds like the kind of thing Yorgos Lanthimos would enjoy. His next film's just going to be called The Rhino.
And it's just one man's journey out of a rhino anus.
With scritching, scratching strings and lots of fisheye.
Yeah, the fisheye just zooming in on the sphincter. As foreboding strings start
perfectly.
To, yeah.
Like an eclipse. This is really disgusting. But like, that is an example of the kind of viscerality that this film has, isn't it? It's really visceral. Yeah. And I think that's kind of a good thing, but it just grates after a while, doesn't it? At first you're like, oh, well, there's like brains like the Temple of Doom. I'm into that, you know? I'm down with that.
Yeah, but at the same time, it doesn't do anything with that. If you're going to use that visceral element, how are you going to... It doesn't make the audience uncomfortable, which is what you kind of want from that viscera element. Don't you?
No, you're right. It didn't make me uncomfortable.
It's all just... And that's the thing, right? Is that... Yet The Favourite maybe didn't make people uncomfortable. And that's maybe the most straightforward comedic film that he's had. This also doesn't make you uncomfortable, even though I think it tries to, with its gratuitousness.
I think it really wants to.
Yeah, but like, you compare this tonally to The Lobster. The Lobster was uncomfortable. And uncomfortable in an insidious way. Whereas this is very much surface level discomfort. And then tying it into a far more obviously comedic setup. And it's just irritating. This is irritating over caffeinated drama school as a movie.
Yeah. People think that they're being like super transgressive and bizarre and out there. And actually, yeah, at first you're like, yeah, that's impressive. But what are you going to do with that?
Yeah.
Where is that going to go? What kind of story are you going to tell me? What depth does that have?
Yeah. What are you going to do with this movie? How is this going to relate to humanity on a wider level? That's the question you need to ask for a movie that gets a 5 out of 5 from Peter Bradshaw, for instance.
Oh, no. Of course. Mark Kermode like was heaping praise on it as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of people were talking dog shit with this one. 88 out of 100 is the Metacritic score on this one.
Blimey.
Sorry, you're all showing
you critics.
You're all showing your asses here. Apart from Rex Reed.
That sounds like the name of a wrestler.
Sounds like the pseudonym of
Rex Reed.
Sounds like a pseudonym of someone from Marvel Comics, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Or like the the villain in the reboot of Puccinski or something.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, so...
Now, what did Rex Reed say?
Rex Reed said, I hated it, but reluctantly give it 1 star for whimsical sets and costumes, and there's a minute sprinkle of suspense while you wait for the point of view that never arrives.
Fair.
San Francisco Chronicle, fair. The verdict is sad but unavoidable. Poor Things is a 141-minute mistake. New York Magazine said it is ultimately ugly spiritually and narratively, which curdles even after its aesthetic splendor.
That's true. I guess what I was getting at when I was saying that it's visceral is it is kind of ugly, isn't it? And it's like the costumes are amazing. They rightly won the Oscar for the costuming, so you can't knock any of that, but all of that kind of Wes Anderson-ish aesthetic actually makes it seem very, very ugly because it's thin.
The story itself is thin,
and that sort of butts up against the viscerality coming at you going, look at me, I'm so visceral and bizarre. And you're like, well, yeah, okay, tell me a story, man.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The New York Times says it isn't long into Poor Things that you start to feel as if you are being bullied into admiring a movie that's so deeply self-satisfied there really isn't room for the two of you, which I think is very, very fair. This is a movie that is so far up its own asshole that it's got a... That's where the fisheye lens to the sphincter comes from.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
It's just incredibly self-satisfied. The whole thing is, look at how smart we are. Look at how pretty this is. Look at how transgressive it is. We showed a woman's boobs. We showed a flaccid penis. Oh.
Yeah. Did you get to see Mark Ruffalo's bum?
Yeah, you see Mark Ruffalo's bum.
Yeah. Yeah, come on. I've seen 365 days. We did a whole episode about it.
There we saw like the briefest hint of erect penis shaft as well, which is far more transgressive than Poor Things. Like, that's the thing, right? This movie likes to think that it's doing something incredibly provocative.
Yeah.
And it's not. This is comfortable stuff that critics can pretend is provocative. Like, it's not even the most...
Yes, that's exactly right.
It's not even the most provocative adaptation of a book in terms of shifting away from the core focus. Like, think about Starship Troopers, for instance, which was basically shitting on the original novel for being a fascist love letter. That's far more transgressive than Poor Things. So much so that people thought that it was a love letter to fascism itself when they watched it.
But yeah, that's the thing. It thinks that by showing you all of that, it's like showing you, look how much agency she has in taking control of her body and her sexuality, but again, she still is kind of sort of taken everywhere by men, isn't she? I don't think it's trying to be some great feminist masterpiece, but at the same time it wants you to think that it is. Almost it wants to have its cake and eat it, doesn't it?
Yeah it's just no time for this movie. I'm never gonna watch it again. I'm probably never gonna think about it again until someone brings up how great it is, and then I tell them that they're pretentious.
Okay, no, it's not. Get out of here.
Like, they put a sheep's brain into a man. Okay, well done.
Oh, I liked that, actually. Yes. I was going to say I did like the ending. I thought it was the end was the good. Last scene yeah. was quite yeah. nice. It was quite well done. Where they're just kind of like...
they're just hanging out in a garden.
Drinking tea while their goat man is just goating around. Was it a goat or a sheep?
I think a sheep.
I thought it was a little goat.
It's nice to see Christopher Abbott in something. We like Christopher Abbott.
Christopher Abbott. What do I know?
You'll
him
know
from?
Him from Girls if you watched Girls.
Oh, yes. That's right. I was wondering where I recognised his face from.
He's been in many excellent movies, including It Comes at Night, which is a very good, tense horror movie, and Possessor, which is a movie by Brandon Cronenberg, which is just as horrible as anything his dad ever made, and I mean that in the best possible way.
Very good.
Yeah. Now, that's a transgressive movie, actually. Speaking of transgressive films... Possessor is incredibly uncomfortable, but also does that gratuity in terms of violence. If you're looking at movies that do it right, but that would never win all the Oscars because it's kind of a horror movie, and they don't like horror movies, do they? The critics?
No.
They'd never put them through to the Oscars to win anything.
Has a horror movie ever won the Oscars?
Silence of the Lambs.
Okay.
Which you can, you'd consider that probably a horror movie.
Yeah,
I think there's been a few here and there, but it's very, very rare. I think you had like, they can win things for special effects, like I think The Fly. I think The Exorcist won as well.
I was going to say, didn't The Exorcist win something?
Yeah. Could you consider... Black Swan a horror movie? Because that one's some shit, but I wouldn't consider that a horror movie. It's more a psychological.
Black Swan
drama.
Is similar to Poor Things. I was almost going to bring it up when you mentioned Darren Aronofsky, as there's a similarly kind of one-note stupidity throughout it that thinks it's really clever and transgressive and is really not. And also had a horrible score that I really hated. Saw that piece of shit in the cinema.
I know that's not it, but that's what it kind of sounded like, wasn't it?
But it's basically that. But the thing is, it doesn't play with the dynamics at all. No. It's the opposite of that, because The Hall of the Mountain King, still Eric's favourite song, by the way, it starts off so low, going boop, 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 and then it eventually builds up to the crashing at the end. Exactly. No, Darren Aronofsky's rendition, I mean, he didn't do the music, obviously. I don't know who did, and I don't care. But whoever did it just decided to go straight in with like the heaviest part. And then just like bring that back at other points in the film when stuff is happening to signify that stuff is happening.
Yeah. I can't think of another horror movie that's won Best Picture apart from Silence of the Lambs, thinking about it.
Yeah.
Listeners, let us know if there's another one that won. I can't think of any off the top of my head.
It came up, we were at someone's house a few months ago and there was a guy doing a film quiz and it said, what's the only R-rated film to have won an Oscar? And I guessed The Exorcist, thinking maybe it was The Exorcist. But no, do you know what it was?
What was it?
Midnight Cowboy.
Oh, because of the sex and drugs.
I've never seen it.
Sex and drugs.
Is that why?
Yeah, that'll be why it got R-rated. Violence, fine. But you do then drugs and then sex. Oh no, you're going to get an R rating for that. This movie was just really disappointing.
Also, there was a kind of weird scene about an hour and a half in where, like, the poor things, it's like a bunch of kids who are dying or babies or something. I'd kind of lost interest at that point.
Yeah, she gets off.
Then it was like, is it trying to do social commentary, really? After you've given me an hour and a half after sort of sexy gothic Wes Anderson sex comedy visceral look at me, I'm so bizarre nonsense, and then suddenly you're trying to do like social commentary. Nah, mate.
And then they do it for 5 seconds and then it's over.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like, okay, fine, is that what you're doing? I assume that's a scene in the book and they're like, oh, we better put that in because that's how they leave the boat and otherwise we don't know how they'd leave the boat.
She witnesses the suffering of the poor. And then, like, 10 minutes later, she's joking about it in Paris, and you're like, we're back to this. But it's, like, the way that it went for kind of total melodrama, like, in that scene of her, like, weeping. It was just, like, it really took it away from the sort of the humorous tone of the rest of it. That scene really tonally didn't work for me at all.
Yeah, and sometimes you can do that flick between comedy and drama or thriller or things like that. Like Parasite is a perfect example of how you can do that.
I've still not seen it.
Flick of a switch, incredibly well done. This was not that. This was clumsy.
Yeah.
But again, it's all big and brash and, oh, look at this. Oh, you weren't expecting to see her crying and biting someone, were you? Oh, you thought she was just going to have sex, did you? You fools. But we're smarter than you because we're poor things. The smartest movie ever made. Fucking pricks. More like poo things.
It would be very easy to just remove that R from the poster, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Be deserved as well. Yeah, I don't understand the love for this movie. I generally get stuff, but apart from the surface level prettiness, I don't get what people see in this.
And often that does a lot for a film, doesn't it? I mean, I think that that is a criticism that is often leveled at Wes Anderson, isn't it? By people who don't enjoy his work. They say, oh, it's all kind of surface level stuff. And it's also, it's almost the same problem that I have with Quentin Tarantino, right? Where I feel that it's all style over substance, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. But at least with Quentin Tarantino, you get explosions. Zero explosions in this movie.
Yeah.
Not a single man set on fire, despite ample opportunity.
No one killed William.
Yeah, I don't get it.
No, I don't get it either.
Sorry, people who like this movie, but you're wrong. And
you're all wrong.
Genuinely, I don't get it. This seems just like massive overhype for a movie that is just style over substance. There is nothing here of any key human value.
No.
Yeah. I mean, go and watch it if you want to hear people saying cunt in funny ways. Genuinely, well, that is enjoyable.
We could do that for you.
And kudos for Mark Ruffalo. I can't remember what his specific wording was, but there was one C-bomb he dropped, which was done incredibly well, and I did have a good chuckle at that.
Yeah, I think he was actually well cast, and I wasn't 100% sure about that. And at first I was like, I can't work out whether I hate his accent and find it offensive or not, but I actually grew to like it. It was provided a bit of levity.
Yeah, I think he was probably the star of this film, as much as people go on about other actors involved. He was the most enjoyable character in it.
Because he's not been in a lot of stuff that I've liked. He usually comes across as quite smug, doesn't he? He was in that one Just Like Heaven that we watched, where he was quite irritating in that, wasn't he?
Yeah, you can't blame...
Where Reese Witherspoon was his dead wife or something?
No, she was the dead previous tenant of the apartment.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
You can't blame him for being a smug mid-2000s male lead in a rom-com, because they were all smug in that era.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying it's something that's unique to him.
Whereas, you know, he's in What's It, isn't he? The Brain Zappy movie.
The Brain Zappy movie.
Jim Carrey's Brain Zap. They zap his...
Mars Attacks.
Zaps the brain and he can no longer remember his relationship. And then they fall back in love. What's it called?
The Eternal Sunshine. Yeah,
the Brain Zap. The Brain Zap movie. Yeah.
No, he is good in that. Yeah.
Yeah. I like him in stuff. His casting as the Hulk in the Marvel movies was good. He brought a humanity to those movies, which was severely lacking. From a hugely cynical franchise that had zero humanity in it.
You're going to say from a huge green guy.
From a huge green guy. Why haven't we seen Mark Ruffalo giant Hulk butt? Maybe we have in one of the movies, but I don't remember it.
I'm not going to watch it just for that. You can probably see that on TikTok.
Yeah, show us where's Mark Ruffalo Hulk butt? That's what we want. Yeah, he was the best thing about this movie, in my opinion.
Yeah, Willem Dafoe was enjoyable too.
He was fine. But, like, he was fine. As was everybody. Everyone in this was good. But it's all just a bit. all just a bit boring and all just a bit vapid.
Yeah.
And all incredibly pretentious.
It hits that sweet spot where, like, it's not so complex or weird that you actually really have to do any critical thinking to get it, but because it looks like it's intelligent and transgressive and difficult, and then people like it because they can then pretend that they're clever, and if they're questioned about it, they can actually talk about it rather than having to explain what they like about, I don't know, a Lars von Trier film or something.
Yeah.
When there is actually nothing to get about that, because all his films are fucking dog shit. But you know what I mean. Right, I'm not explaining myself well.
No, I get you. I think it's just,
I've eaten too much pizza.
This is just extremely disappointing.
That's the thing as well. I wanted to like it. I wanted it to be this massive tour de force. And yeah, it was a bit of a wet fart, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Go watch The Favourite instead, a movie that works on every level.
I think that's also
better.
On Disney Plus.
Yeah, probably. A movie that works in every single way better than this.
Yeah. Or watch a Wes Anderson film. Although I hear the latest one isn't very good.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, go watch The Favourite. If you've not seen The Favourite, go watch that. That's very funny. There's a bit
the where Naked Duck Race is something that I think ducks. About a lot.
And also some very funny swearing in that as well. So, you know.
Yes. That's got C-bombs too.
It does. Have you got anything else you want to say about Poor Things?
No, I think we've covered it. We don't need to keep digging into it, do we?
In which case, how are we going to rate this?
Let's see.
How many philosophy books will you throw over the side of a cyberpunk cruise ship?
That's good. Let's see, 5 of a possible 20. Yeah. Like, I don't know, not going to go as low as like 1 or 2, because there are a few good points, but like, yeah, 5 out of 20, 6 out of 20.
Yeah, I'll go 6. You know, this movie does have, I got bored of the visuals very quickly, but there is some sharp dialogue and there are some good performances, but it's just insufferable.
Yeah, like, that's the right word.
So it just thinks way too much of itself, and that shines through in every single scene. So yeah, proceed with caution. Sorry, people who like this movie, but you're entirely wrong. Genuinely,
you're wrong.
You are wrong.
And you should feel bad.
You should feel bad.
Signed, very experienced film critics. I mean, to be fair, we've done over 300 episodes. You we'd have something clever to say.
We should be on Metacritic, quite frankly. They should add our review for Just Like Kevin to Metacritic.
They should add the fact that I couldn't later. Remember what film it was and and thought Reese Witherspoon was his dead wife.
Anyway, what are we watching next?
I can't remember. Is it your choice or is it mine?
We were going to do Roadhouse and Roadhouse.
Oh, Roadhouse Double Bill. Oh, and then there was that one with Nicolas Cage.
Oh, yeah. I've forgotten what that was.
Valley Girl.
Well, shall we do...
So, punk Nicolas Cage or Jake Gyllenhaal?
Shall we do Roadhouse? Roadhouse and Roadhouse. We'll see if we can find the original Roadhouse to watch anywhere easily. And if so, we can double bill it.
Yeah, Swayze.
If we can't find it anywhere, we'll just do the Jake Gyllenhaal one, and then we'll see about finding it elsewhere later.
Cool. I would like to watch the original one though, because I haven't seen it.
Ah, yes, that's true. That's true.
I'm sure I can get hold of it somewhere.
Okay, well let's do the Roadhouse double bill then.
All right. Good idea. Well, thanks a lot for listening in. We really appreciate it. If you saw Poor Things, I'm sorry. If you didn't, go watch The Favourite instead. You can find us on Twitter at BigBoysDon'tPod. You can email us BigBoysDon'tCryPodcast@gmail.com. And we'll be back next week to talk about Roadhouse.
Roadhouses.
Roadhouse and Roadhouse. No, is the sequel called The Roadhouse?
No, it's just called Roadhouse. They missed a trick there.
Yeah, they definitely did. A roadhouse, some roadhouses.
Exactly. Yeah. Go down the aliens route.
Oh, no, the next one's called Roadman.
Fighter of the Nightmare.
More specific to the UK. Yeah, the UK remake would just be called Roadman, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Anyway, goodbye.
Bye. Roadman.